Hello, my name is Vytenis Burokas, and I'm an artist, and sometimes I curate and teach.
The Wandering Wind, your exhibition in 2020. Tell me more about it.
Actually, it's very hard to translate that, because in Lithuanian it's called Skersvėjo klajonės. It's a draft, you know, but draft not like beer, but draft like a wind. When you leave your window open and suddenly you open the door,
right,
and there is this kind of diagonal suction in the room, which like, suddenly shuts the door or like, I don't know. So this idea of this wind came to me when I stumbled upon like one particular culture, a Malay culture, where they have this kind of shamanistic practice, which is called main peteri. So this is kind of staged performance, like of particular group of people who are thinking about their own temperament or like kind of specifics of their psychological constitution through the metaphor of wind. They say that you have particular wind in yourself, which manifests in this and this way. So as an artist, I take it as a metaphor. And I think in this particular way that there's all sorts of societal or ideological pressures. When you start to forget your initial kind of ideas about your own practice, and you start again, like you start to kind of model yourself around concepts which is not necessarily felt. And it was a time to think about materiality a lot, because previously quite some of my works were really like ephemeral, let's say, or informed by, again, by some kind of investigations into theory, into historical aspects, trying to deconstruct one or the other thing, like the way I used to think about that and how it changes during the process of actually dealing with one or the other idea or the topic. When I experienced the impact of online activities during quarantine, I was not thinking probably the right way that, oh, somehow I should adjust my artistic practice to be translated online but I was actually thinking the opposite, that I really want to throw myself back into materiality, into spatial kind of expression. And therefore, in editorial, I created this installation which took over entire space, which is not big, but I decided to create some sort of imaginary wall structure. So there was this those metal kind of frames in which I kind of entrapped it, or like there was some sort of fresque kind of motifs. And fresque for me, okay, it's not traditional fresque, but it's
you mean fresco?
Fresco, yeah. I decided somehow to create just remaining parts of the wall which used to stand there, let's say. And also when you see all those old frescoes, which is uncovered accidentally like somewhere, usually you see fragments of that. Fragments of bigger picture. So I decided somehow to use different like plasters and primary materials from construction sites. So I use metal frames, I use metal net, and then I mix particular mixture of plasters. The net is working as a rebar, but then this plaster, it's suspended in the air. So this is just a fragment of a bigger picture. And the character I created, I call the character himself Skersvis, or a wind. So it's not only like bird-like kind of motif. There is this character standing there, and he has a beard. Like after quarantine, I had a beard, bigger one. So there is this suction in the room, which is constantly sucking his beard into this linear kind of end.
So it's not a beak of a bird. It's a beard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you see the movement of the character. It's a little bit like in Muybridge photography. You try to somehow capture this character, but he's moving, he's shifting, he's changing his appearances and so on. But you see also kind of spiral composition in the space, because the character is repeated certain amount of times. You see that there is movement, there is repetition, but his posture is not really changing. In a way, he's captured, he's changing in a sense, but at the same time, he's being the same.
Right.
Despite the fact that there is a kind of structural change. But as you understand, I had possibilities in this exhibition, let's say, to just create those structures, these those frescoes directly on the wall, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Or like maybe hang them there. But for me, it was important to create space inside of the space so that there is good side, so-called, like I'm joking, like good side and bad side of the of
positive
the painting.
And negative, yeah.
And when audience goes in into the exhibition space, they see others being inside of this space of character, and they look through the bad side of the structure.
Right.
Whatever that means, bad side. I mean, materiality for me was important in both sides. But when you enter the inside of the cube, you somehow go into the like fictional space of this character which is created.
Fascinating. And it's ritualistic at the same time, right? It's it's cyclical, it's choreographed. This ritualism, it's a recurring theme in your work, so it seems. I'm particularly thinking of another piece that you did, or a series that you did in Sanatorium, as well as the sea monster, the bear, right? You exhibited fragments of Sanatorium work in that exhibition. Could you elaborate on that?
Quite similar project, in a sense of initial idea behind it. So again, I created this alter ego character, which is a member of secret society. He's a member of secret society called the Order of the Spur. Again, I was influenced actually to create this series by one small book by a writer named Enrique Villamatas. And in this book, he was describing this literary secret society. And they were traveling like around Europe and maybe outside of Europe, like around the world, let's say. And like really when I was reading it, I was like, I don't know, affected by depiction of this circle in a way that it was so accurate to what I experienced in my own life with those artistic circles where you read same books, you are influenced by the same like theory, same approaches towards certain aspects of artistic practice, and then how you start to, at the same point, affect each other in a way that certain ideological constitutions start to work also not only as liberating, but also as restricting certain actions. Like when I called it the Order of the Spur, actually, I was thinking about, you know, riding, horse riding.
Mm.
And, you know, horse riders wear spurs to cause pain.
Right.
To horse in order that the horse will follow orders.
Yeah.
You know, self-bridling, mm-hmm. you know, self-taming.
Right.
You know, in Lithuanian, it's called tramdimas.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's self-bridling. It's in a way... internalization of institutions.
Right. So self-censorship is another way of saying
yeah,
it.
Yeah, also. So you see, in this society, everyone is wearing spurs, but what they're doing with their spurs is taming themselves and colleagues around them, other members of society. So, but it's more complicated than that. I was not trying only to depict this kind of pain of being kind of imprisoned into some sort of like circle. But in general, when we talk about those circles, like, I know many writers were like, and in philosophy we're talking about that, like this urgency to form circles and to wear badges and to feel part of like some sort of structure of friends, you know. So I have this too, I mean, but this particular exhibition was my idea of rethinking that membership, you know. So why I call it sanatorium? Because this particular member I'm talking about escaped, finally. And because in this society they were not allowed to create material things, because they were constantly traveling, you know. So he finally escaped and he's staying in sanatorium and trying to recuperate, to gain back his kind of vital energy. And he tries slowly to make some small moves, trying to, I don't know, do some nice watercolor or maybe a little drawing and stuff. But he's reminding himself that I shouldn't do works, you know, I shouldn't paint, I shouldn't make sculptures because they immediately become part of the market and sinful. Like, I shouldn't participate in that because, you know, he's immediately thinking about consequences, not about the primary initial urgency to make art. He's thinking about where it will end up, and that is bad, where it will end up, because it suddenly will be taken into those impure kind of relations. So for me, this is the idea.
Right.
But then this guy escaped. So in the exhibition, I showed drawings, like watercolors, and also some small sculptural pieces with cotton earbuds,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Colored in yeah. multiple colors. I was curious about that. Could you comment on those earbuds? And
it reminds me of this game, Mikado, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When you hold sticks with different color patterns, you drop it and then you look how they cross each other.
Yeah, that was my association, yeah.
Yeah. So this is highly connected with modernism and with sanatorium. Why I started in the first place to think about sanatorium is because this is modernist utopian project of 20th century. When sanatorium was no longer place to heal tuberculosis after invention of antibiotics,
mm-hmm.
it became some sort of like places for recuperation, you know? Like, let's say, let's remember like Federico Fellini, 8 and a half. Sanatorium became this place where artists and intellectuals and like other people used to escape metropolis or the city into this small model of society. And that was new idea. At the time, it was new idea. And around Europe, you have even like architectural movement, like with Alvar Aalto and others who started to make sanatoriums oriented towards sun and so on to kind of fulfill this ideology of not only about healing something, but preventing. This is the idea mm-hmm. of prevention, of betterment of your health.
So before this shift, so to speak, in your work, you were focused on epochal theories and epochal ways of new thought that incorporates, you know, technology and nature as equal parts to humanity in this articulation of ontology, this post-humanist streak. And one of such examples of your creative work is your curatorial collaboration, as I understand, in 2017 called City Nature.
Yeah, I think it actually grew out of my interest in these topics. And I'm still kind of interested in that. But at the time, I was working as a curator at the National Gallery of Art in Vilnius. So, yeah, I was part of the bigger team because there was four of us. There was Agle Mikalajūnė, Vitaly Červekov, and Agle Nedzinskaitė, and me. And we had this task to create exhibition With commissioned works, which is quite rare in the National Gallery of Art in Vilnius, at least it was. So it was an international project when we decided somehow to look into the city where we're living in, or in any city actually, through the perspective of when the when agents of this process is not considered only like, which is not anthropocentric. So therefore, the exhibition was called City Nature, Vilnius and Beyond. To understand how this exhibition was constructed, it is important that we also were working with scientific projects. And part of the participants of exhibition were scientists.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, there was four of us, actually, because the project itself was very, very, like, time-consuming, very big, in the sense that there was so many scientific researches in geological formation of the city, plant kind of biology, but invasive species, like investigation into invasive species in former dump sites, how human trash and waste changes environment, like geological environment. Then we were talking about hygiene, let's say, because in Vilnius it was a new concept, and how illnesses and diseases used to affect formation of the city in different periods of time. Then we were talking about metaphors of the body again. Then other artist, Kuai Shen, he created piece with live ants, and as an artist he's investigating all the time ants as a species, but that was very particular species, which is also very influential in the biodiversity of the forest itself.
Since we're moving into nature, from the city into nature, narratively, I wanted to ask you about my personal favorite of your projects, is which is called Beer Metaphysics. I see this project as some kind of a stepping stone from one of your period to another, right? Mm-hmm. Because it incorporates both this post-humanist thought about the cohabitation of different species and not necessarily human, but also extending it to this more literary and narrative alter ego based and more classics oriented form. So I was very curious to hear more about that from you.
It's very strange because when I think about my works, let's say, or my interest in works, I don't have any beef with classics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm studying what I can. Everyone has its own, like, their own limitations, of course. But I'm interested in philosophy from different periods of history. And I don't see that certain parts of history of philosophy can be outdated in any way. For me, that as a revelation was Epicurean philosophy, and Epicurus, as a Greek atomist, was important for me in the process of creating beer metaphysics, especially his idea about parenklesis or kleinamen. But for me, parenklesis was an idea of error in formation of universe. The kleinamen is a smallest, infinitesimally small particle which is falling constantly. Like, there's loads of particles and they're falling downwards in the vast emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
But suddenly, one of the atoms, or of course, atom is a new idea. Back then, they were calling it like the smallest possible particle. So this particle suddenly swerves from its initial trajectory and clashes with the other. And because of this error in the system, the swerve, or the kleinamen, those atoms start to clash into each other, therefore creating everything. It's spontaneous. It's suddenly one of the atoms, like, Okay, it's anthropomorphization that we say, like he decided.
Mm-hmm.
No, suddenly he, out of blue, he just swerved from its initial trajectory and started those collisions. And out of collisions and bifurcations, multiplicity appeared. And suddenly you see that in contemporary physics and chemistry, you see that in the systems, and like, let's say they talk about laminar flow. In controlled experiment, you watch laminar flow, and suddenly, out of blue, you start to see turbulence in inside pockets. It looks from the first glance that there is nothing which can cause those, like, turbulence, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, the laminar flow is like steady flow of liquids, and then suddenly you see that there is swirls, whirlpools, all sort of things which appear there. And at a certain point, I start to think about beer, but it's completely accidental. Actually, it was part of Rupert's educational program. And a friend of a friend came to Vilnius, and his name was Kyle Mitchell, and he was analytical philosopher from Trinity College and a PhD candidate. And of course, he's like very, very strict analytical philosopher. And we were drinking beer and discussing those things. And then I like came up with this idea that, okay, Kyle, like, but what about scholastic philosophy? You know, like Anselmus Canterburian, like with Proslogion, the proof of God's existence, or I know Scott Duns, or like I know Hildegard von Bingen, or like all those from mystics to philosophers who were somehow creating their philosophical ideas whilst being in monastic context and drinking beer. So it's not directly connected somehow, it seems, but it can be, you know, because also alongside I was reading all those texts about gut bacteria, about brain gut axis and how it can possibly change your attitudes, your feelings, your way of thinking. So yeah, and then I said, like, Kyle, I will brew this beer and let's have seminars which were called Philosophy of Inebriation or Beer Metaphysics. So actually, not the beer was important for me, but it was just a tool to start this conversation about the effects of non-human agents and how they affect our perceptions.
Heading towards the end of the conversation, you mentioned Rupert. You underwent an educational program here as well, right? Could you tell me more about it?
Yeah, that was a very nice experience, actually. The way I perceived this program was something we didn't had at the time, which is official studies in Art Academy, where you learn some certain things. But then you go out of it, and historically, you can see that in Lithuania, with artistic context, it was at the time very local. The model was not it was developed during the process. And it was very nice to be in this process, but there was also many like conflicts or doubts about like how we should deal here with this experience, and there were many participants from abroad. So this particular educational program was not coined only from locals, but also part of the members were from New Zealand, from United States, and other parts. So yeah, that was a very nice experience, and actually it was very productive.
Perfect. Thank you.